Okay, we're just going to keep moving right along here. I'm Candy Nelson. I'm an associate professor of government at American University and director of the Campaign Management Institute. This next panel is on modern political campaigns, a rather broad topic, but more particularly the role of television advertising in campaigns. We have two excellent people to speak about this. On my far left is Doug Bailey. Doug is the founder of Bailey Dierdorf, which he founded in 1968, one of the first national political consulting firms in the country, and worked with Republican candidates at the federal and state level. He more recently was the founder of The Hotline, which I think everyone in this room is pretty familiar with. He's also the co-founder of Youthy Vote, as well as the CEO and founder of Freedom Channel. And most recently, he's the co-founder of Freedom's Answer, which is a nonprofit program to try and increase voter turnout. So Doug has a lot of experience in campaigns and various aspects thereof. On my immediate left is Ken Goldstein. Ken is the Hawkins Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin at Madison and director of the University of Wisconsin's Advertising Project and their News Lab. He's the author of Interest Groups, Lobbying, and Participation in America. He's the author of over 25 refereed journal articles and book chapters on various aspects of politics. He's been doing a lot of work of late in television advertising and has a manuscript coming out on that. He is a contributor, a consultant to ABC News, to their election unit, and he is a regular commentator and quoted in all of the major networks and newspapers, The Post, The Times, CNN, all the evening news programs, The NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, et cetera, et cetera. So they both have a wealth of experience, and we're going to start with Doug.
Thank you, Candace. Thank you, Kirk Gans, for putting this program together. I congratulate all of you sitting on this side of the room for your boldness and coming through the door and turning left. But most speakers are speaking over here, so I will too. I'm going to just throw out a variety of coherent thoughts, but I will leave it to Ken to make sense out of them. In his remarks. My experience with television politics goes back a long way. When I founded the Hotline in the late 80s, it was because I had to get out of campaign politics because our politics was getting so negative and so nasty and so dumb, particularly in television, that I couldn't stand it any longer. So, as some have accused me now, I just produce that daily report that reports on all of the nastiness and dumbness and so forth. But I don't participate in the campaigns anymore. But I do go back a long way with television, and I think it's worth remembering when you talk about television and politics that there was politics even before there was television. There were campaigns even before there was television. And it's worth remembering what television gave the parties and the candidates the opportunity to do that they didn't have before television existed. And it may sound simplistic, but I'd like to stress that a little bit. Right now, to those of you who have not known me before, you're making a judgment of me. You've never seen me before. You're making a reaction, you're making a judgment about me, good or bad. I hope it's good, but in any event, you're having a reaction to me because you are seeing me in person, and you can, and you instinctively are. And even if you resist having a feeling about me, you're going to have a feeling about me because you can see me and you can see a living, breathing human being, and you either like me or you don't like me, or you think I'm dumb or boring or old or young or whatever. Young. I predict you all think I'm young. The point is that before television happened, If you didn't meet a candidate or see a candidate in person, which most voters never did, you had no basis for that natural judgment that every one of us makes when we see somebody in person. So that the opportunity that television provided was for candidates to be seen and reacted to by all of those who could vote for them. That's just a sort of revolutionary change in our politics. Our thought always was, at Bailey Dierdorf, although we didn't know much about television and never done any advertising for anybody, bar a soap or a candidate or anybody else, before we just dived into the deep end of the pool and experimented, sometimes at the expense of our candidates, in trying to find out what this new medium was. Our feeling was that the most important thing we could do is to part the curtains and let the candidate be seen as he or she genuinely was. And if that wasn't good enough, then maybe there was a reason for that. Now, I don't mean that personality ought to totally dominate everybody's decisions in politics or in how you vote. Of course, issues ought to matter. Of course, the capacity to communicate ought to matter, and all of those things ought to matter. But it is inevitable that if you know the candidate or feel that you know the candidate, that is going to dominate in your thinking toward that campaign. And while that elevates the importance of personality, it doesn't eliminate issues, but it does elevate the importance of personality. And that is inevitable. That's the inevitable price of television. The point I want to make is that, does that happen anymore? Do television ads show the candidates anymore? Can you think of a television ad that has parted the curtains for a candidate, where a campaign has parted the curtains and let the candidate be seen as the candidate genuinely is? If you think about most TV ads, I think you will recognize that the words they speak have been pretested, and you sort of know that when you watch that. Or it's an announcer speaking, not the candidate, or there are graphics all over the screen that take away from the authenticity of the candidate that is being advertised for, so that the major opportunity that television provided campaigns to communicate who the candidate is and what his or her priorities are and what kind of personality is this and is this a leader that I can trust, is basically been removed. Maybe for good reason, from the standpoint of the consultants and the campaigns. After all, their job is to win the campaign, win the election. And maybe the candidate can't withstand the curtains being parted and being seen as they genuinely are. But that's really an important element of what has happened to television advertising, it seemed to me. Think of it another way. In presidential campaigns, where you get a chance to see and know a whole lot more about the candidates than in any other campaign, television advertising probably less important than it is in other campaigns, but still, in a television campaign, what is the thing? What is the one thing that happens every 4 years that's more likely to change your vote or influence you than anything else? And it is the debates, is it not? You watch the debates and you react to the people who are participating. You react to their issues, but frankly, you react more than to their issues, you react to their personalities. You react to whether you like that person, trust that person, is that the authentic person, is that too programmed, is that real? It's the one part of politics, frankly, that presidential debates may suffer from a lot of shortcomings. All of us can think of ways to make them better. But it's the one part of presidential politics, and I think at local political level too. It's the one, the television debates, live television debates, are the one part of politics which use television the most effectively to do what television can do, and that is to portray who the candidates are. Now, how do we go from that opportunity to a point where we have essentially thrown that opportunity away? It's just not used anymore. Well, there are three or four things, and all of these, none of them will surprise you, but you may not have recognized, as those of us in the business may have, how important and powerful some of these changes that have occurred in the meantime have been. The single most important, in my judgment, is the remote control. Think about it from a moment. Put yourselves in the shoes of the ad makers. When we put our 30-second ad or 60-second ad on the air, and you don't have a remote control, it means that if you're going to change channels, you have to get up out of your sofa, you couch potato you, come all the way across the room and change the channel. So we think of you as a captive audience if you have no remote control, which means that our 30 seconds or our 60 seconds is a lot easier communication. Then along comes the remote control. And now, mid-80s, virtually everybody had the remote control and be able to zap you in an instant if you didn't satisfy them, and they didn't have to move any muscle other than the thumb to do it. What does that mean to those of us who make the ads? It means we've got to get your interest immediately. We've got to put something on the screen that keeps you engaged. We got to entertain you, we got to shock you, we got to draw your attention. And if you ask, why have television ads become so negative, so confrontational? That's one of the reasons. It's why it's why television in general through the years becomes so controversial and so entertaining and so bombastic and so confrontational, inventing new sports and games and wrestling and race cars and race tracks and poker and all the rest. It is to get your attention and keep your attention and grab a share of the audience, because with more channels and the remote control to get you to them, to hold the audience, to grab the audience and hold the audience is tough. Well, it's very tough for the advertisers. Political advertising in particular. And so, once again, the remote control and the growth on television of more and more confrontation change the atmosphere in politics from communicating who you are to communicating who the other guy is. More entertaining. People say they don't like negative advertising, and in general they don't, but they find it more entertaining. And by the way, it works. Let me come back to that as to why it works. it's important, it really is important to understand why it works, to explain the change in television advertising, but is also, but there's another factor that I want to just touch on first. In the very first days of television, when the networks were still trying to understand what they were doing, and still trying to understand, maybe they still are, trying to understand the medium that had been invented for us to play around with, political campaigns could buy by a half hour time. Not necessarily that a whole lot of people would watch, but you could buy half an hour of time. You could buy, this is really interesting, of course you could buy 60 seconds or you could buy 30 seconds of time slots, but you could also buy 5 minutes of time. 5 minutes of time. It was actually 4.5 minutes, and they would sell you 4.5 minutes at the very end of a half hour. Now remember, in the early days, there were three stations, maybe four, but only three or four channels. But they would sell you 5 minutes at the end of a half hour, so there was not much, and there was no remote control. So there wasn't much of an opportunity that you, or a likelihood that you were going to go switching channels to see what was on the other station, because nothing would start for another 5 minutes. So you bought the little 5 minutes. It's really 4.5 minutes. 4.5 minutes is infinitely longer than 9 times 30 seconds. Like any other form of communication, when you can tell a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, you can get people engaged in your story, and from my standpoint, win a vote in those 4.5 minutes. You can tell a lot about your candidate. You can show his or her personality. You can talk about a bunch of issues. You can demonstrate priorities. You can indicate history. You can show how they react to people. You can show enough of a story, enough of a candidate to win a vote right then and there. They don't have to see that ad 5 times. They've seen it once, and you win a vote. As as the number of channels was expanding, the amount of time, particularly the length of time, being made available for campaigns to buy disappeared. You can't buy half an hour now, and maybe at 3 o'clock in the morning on some obscure cable channel, but you can't buy half an hour now. And no campaign would do that. You can't buy 5 minutes now. In primetime television, you're pretty well limited to 30 seconds, maybe 60, maybe 15. The difference between 4.5 minutes and 30 seconds is the difference between positive and negative. If I want to win your vote, if Ken and I are running against each other, and I want to win your vote for me, I've got to tell you a lot of things about me. I've got to tell you a little bit about my history. I've got to tell you, I've got to show my personality. I've got to tell you about 3 or 4 issues that you may care about. That's if you're going to vote for me. But it's a whole lot easier for me to get you to vote against Ken. Actually, it's a very bad example because I can't imagine anybody ever voting against Ken. But the fact is that the chances are, if I knew him better, I could find something about it that I could put into a 30-second ad, which becomes a silver bullet. In other words, you only need to know one thing to vote against him. You need to know a lot of things to vote for me. And that's the challenge of the campaign advertising team, a very difficult one, and it's not surprising, is it? Since I can't put all those things into one 30-second ad, all those positive things, you need to see a lot of 30-second ads, but I can produce one silver bullet that wins a vote, in effect for me, but you're really voting against him. Extraordinarily important. Then let me really expand on this. The introduction of cable is a lot more than just going from 3 channels to 20 to 60 to 200 to 500 or however many there are if you were to subscribe to all of the satellite services that are available. It's not just that the audience is dispersed. We tend to think of cable as producing, I mean, in the world of politics, we think of Fox News is a conservative channel. You know, everything else is okay, but Fox News is a conservative channel. Well, the fact is that there are a great many channels out there that appeal to certain types of viewers. It's why they exist. ESPN. People who do not like sports do not watch ESPN. The Christian Broadcast Network. Black Entertainment Television. MTV. The Comedy Channel. Fox News Network, yes, and a host of the Golf Channel, Food Channel. There are a host of opportunities and a host of segregated viewing audiences that campaigns can reach. It might surprise some of you to know that there has not been a national network television by a presidential campaign since 1992. Not one. Not one 30-second buy on all of NBC or CBS or ABC since 1992. Why? Because there are red states and there are blue states and there are target markets that you're trying to reach, but also because there are so many different audience segments that can be reached via cable. This is not an argument against cable. What a silly thing that would be to try to do. It's just a reality, however, is that cable presents an opportunity for me, the campaigner, the campaign advertiser, to find my audience out there and drill a message to them. It is not just coincidental that in the last 2 presidential cycles, but particularly in 2004, what has been the history of American politics for the entire last 100 years has changed in one significant respect. Elections used to be, this has certainly been true since the founding of the television age, about the middle. That group of voters that could be influenced, the influenceables, the ones that could go this way or that way, who might go this way in one election and this way 2 or 4 years later. Those people who could split their ticket, vote one way for president and another way for governor or Senate. That's what elections used to be about. But you take a look at the 2004 presidential election and you'll see that each campaign focused an enormous, and the independent expenditures too, focused an enormous amount of money and effort at turning out their base, finding their base, expanding their base, and turning their base out. Good way to win an election. Wonderful way to win an election. The Democrats spent so much time and effort, and their independent expenditure committee spent so much time and effort doing that, that they produced the largest vote for John Kerry that any presidential candidate in all American history had ever received. They did the best job of turning out the base vote of the Democratic Party in the history of the country. And yet they lost the election reasonably handily. It was close, but not like 2000. Because the Bush people, the Republican Party, did an even better job of finding their base and turning it out, and concentrating their campaign, including their advertising, but concentrating their campaign and their messages and their messaging and their organization and finding their base and turning it out. Now, some of the techniques used, all legal and all going to be used heavily again, but some a little bit scary. In the Republican National Committee, there is something they call the vault. It's almost worthy of a television reality show, the vault. And in the vault are the names, voting history, consumer data history, individual history, whatever is available by a financial or other records of every voter in every county in every state in America. And so if you have that kind of data and you have committed the resources to building that kind of voter file, then it's not too difficult with electronic data to cross all that data with the indices of what represents your base vote. That people who buy this kind of car and go to this kind of church and vote in these kinds of elections are likely voters for yours. So you target them and you go and cherry pick even in Democratic areas. You cherry pick household by household. And in those Republican base areas, of course, you try to, you're cherry picking too, but you're also trying to turn out everybody, because the more the vote, the more you win. Now, that's a way of winning elections. It really discounts the importance of television, frankly. But it does something else. And this is, to me, really, really important to understand. If the national campaigns are seeking to turn out their base, that's what their campaigns are, and they are waging an advertising campaign and a public campaign to appeal to the base and maximize their base votes, and they are not going after the middle, that is what's called polarizing the electorate. It's a good way to win, but it does polarize the electorate into two sort of separate camps. It forces everybody into those two camps. So we have a polarized electorate from the campaign tactics that are being used, and that for the first time in American history, at least in modern history, to my knowledge anyway, first time since I've ever been in Washington, which was from the mid-60s on. That polarization of the electorate and of campaign techniques has reached the Congress and Washington. So that we used to talk about elections being about the middle. I think we also used to think that important decisions in this city were made to some degree by consensus, not by fiat of one party over the other, but by to some degree by consensus. You had 70% of one party and 30% of the other, and you reached a conclusion. And that was not a consensus that everybody agreed to, but it was enough of a consensus that it represented the middle of America. Now, I've gotten away a little bit from television, I understand that, but I think one thing that's worth saying before I sit down is that, at least here's a little, need to wrap up. I've been given a note, I just noticed it. You probably gave it to me 10 minutes ago, sorry. Here's a little challenge for you. It's not a huge audience, but I challenge anybody here to remember a single TV ad run by either of the campaigns, not the 527s, not the independent groups, the two campaigns for president in 2004. If you can't remember one, what does that say about them? And then let me just make a general comment that I'll be happy to talk about later if you want. The consulting industry has become so mercenary, and the advertising commissions are the source of their funds, that campaigns, even though television has gone by the way as an extraordinary vehicle, as the dominant vehicle of persuasion, in American politics, the fact of the matter is campaigns keep spending and spending and spending on genuinely bad ads, in my opinion, not non-effective advertising, so that the mercenaries in the consulting business can earn their commissions. Now I'll sit down, let Ken make sense out of it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doug, very much.
Thank you very much for having me here. I've been a student of participation for quite some time, and I'd never had the privilege of meeting Curtis Gantz. I was very, very excited when he invited me to come speak here. I've been a sort of a longtime fan of Doug Bailey. I think we met once a number of years ago. You were talking about ESPN. I've always said that if ESPN or the Hotline existed when I was in college, I never would have graduated, because I was an equal junkie for watching ESPN baseball or for reading the Hotline, which has really become not only an indisposable. I think there's lots of people who are doing a similar thing, and in some ways it was years ahead of its time. Not only covering the daily goings-ons in politics for all of us who are political junkies, but has been a tremendous resource for scholars as well, looking back to the 88 campaign is when it started in 1987. So I guess it's going to be a little bit of a contrast ad. So having said that, I have great respect for both Doug and Curtis, I'm going to disagree with them a little bit, gently again, so this is a contrast ad, not a pure negative ad here. I think in the language that's in the program introducing this particular segment, the assumption really is that advertising is bad, negative advertising is bad, and that advertising is responsible for many, if not most, of the ills that we now see in American politics. That might be overstating it a bit, but there is a line in there. And Doug talked about some of his concerns about advertising. Let me talk about some trends, talk about some evidence about the effect of advertising, and then also make a little bit of a normative argument about advertising and step outside the data a little bit. We're going to start to see in a little bit, and we've probably already started to see, the sort of story you see 8, 9, 10 months out, maybe a year out in an election year. And that story goes something like this, that it's not going to be TV advertising this time. this is going to be the year of the phone call. This is going to be the year of get out the vote in person. This is going to be the year of the internet. This is going to be the year of the radio ad. Name it, name it, name it. And that story is soon replaced a couple months later by the story saying, this is a record-breaking year for political advertising. We've never, ever seen more political advertising being aired. Which does lead to a bit of a puzzle. And you talk to the campaign professionals, and I don't not only do sort of the geeky stuff with the Wisconsin Advertising Project data, I try and get out and talk to consultants. And you have more and more money and more ads chasing fewer swing voters who are watching less TV in fewer swing states. So if you sort of figure out the amount of money you're spending per vote, per swing vote in this country, it's going to be quite significant. But nevertheless, we see continued increases in political advertising, and I have no doubt that again in 2006 we'll see record for a midterm election, and in 2008 we will certainly see, with two contested primaries in both parties and the money-raising potential of many of the candidates who will run, again, record-breaking spending in 2008. So that most advertising ever story is soon going to be replaced by the story, which is this is the most negative campaign ever. So every year, as long as I can remember, it's the most negative campaign ever. And you can go through and go to the New York Times and Washington Post and find the quotes, most negative campaign ever, and I could give you all the quotes and you wouldn't be able to tell which year it is. But again, a very predictable story. And then you have what some in academia have made, what many others have made, is that negative advertising has tremendously bad consequences for turnout, for interest, for knowledge, for efficacy, all the things we should care about in our democracy. Well, one thing I think to say is that, and Doug made this point, that campaigning didn't start with television advertising, and negative campaigning didn't start with television advertising. You want to see some good negative campaigning? Go look what was said about Thomas Jefferson. You want to see some good negative campaigning? Thomas Jefferson, John Kerry can take some solace in knowing he was the first candidate to be accused of being French in an American presidential election. Andrew Johnson, tremendous, tremendous negative advertising in tremendous negative campaigns in American history. If Abraham Lincoln, the one reason why Abraham Lincoln didn't use negative television advertising in his campaigns was because advertising didn't exist. If it would have, he would have. What's the academic evidence say about this connection? So there's certainly more advertising than ever. And in 2004, all of you know it better than anybody, television advertising has been a staple in American political campaigns for over 30 years. But there was about 60 or 70% more advertising just in the presidential race going from 2000, which was an incredibly competitive race, to 2004. The academic evidence. There are certainly some scholars who believe that negative advertising has bad consequences, bad effects on turnout, interest, efficacy. I am not one of those scholars, and I think this is my ad, I get to talk, so maybe I'm a little biased, but I think most scholars at this point, and most of the scholarly evidence, not all of the scholarly evidence, suggests that television advertising in general, and negative advertising in particular, is more likely to engage voters. Voters are more likely to be interested if they're exposed to negative advertising. They're more likely to know more about the candidates and their positions if they're exposed to negative advertising. And they're more likely to vote if they're exposed to negative advertising. Now, the key point to make here is all of that is very much at the margin. We are not talking about effects in the 10, 15, 20 percentage point range. We're talking about persuasive effects for advertising of a percent or two or three. And we're talking about modest but significant effects in terms of engaging voters, making them more knowledgeable, and making them more likely to vote. Now,
one of the first things that we
I like to look at I like to look at advertisements as sort of vitamins. Advertising should not be, negative advertising should not be, television advertising should not be the only way that Americans get information. I think that advertising can be a vitamin, a supplement, a good heuristic, a good shortcut to people who use their pre-existing knowledge, their partisan predispositions to make informed decisions about who they should vote for. The problem in American politics is not necessarily that campaigns have changed. Campaigns have certainly changed. There's more advertising. There's more negative advertising. And I think Doug accurately outlined the reasons why that's the case. And I'm not sure there's much that we could do about that. The problem is that if television advertising is the vitamin, if the campaign in general is the vitamin, Americans' political diets are so bad. Newspaper readership down. Viewership of national news. People can agree or disagree about whether national news is good, but try, as I've done, to systematically look at how local news covers politics. There is just not a lot of substance in local news. And if you look at what happens with politicians in Washington now, and I think the Clinton team was very, very skilled at doing this, and the Bush team has brought it to a whole other new level, they don't talk to the people in Washington. They talk right to the swing markets, and they talk right to local news in the swing markets. And one of the interesting things in 2004 is you really had local news reporters who were completely out of their league. They were getting nationally very experienced political elites and campaigners here, going to them in their small market and making deals and essentially getting free advertising in terms of local news coverage of the presidential race. And that also happens at other lower level races. So I think one of the reasons why people blame TV advertising so much, campaigns are campaigns, and we could talk about this, and there was plenty of negative campaigns 200 years ago, there was plenty of negative campaigns 100 years ago. You really want to see the nasty stuff? Don't talk to the guys making the TV ads, talk to the guys making the radio ads. You really want to see the nasty stuff? Talk to the people who were doing direct mail. The problem is the context of which these campaign tactics are happening in which you have voters who know less. And you also have, as much as there's the internet and as much as people can read all sorts of incredible sources on American politics, most Americans get most of their news from local news, general newspaper readership down, and people just don't have that body of knowledge. I also think it's important to put into context, in an anecdotal sense, about the effect of negative advertising. I saw a cartoon, it was last year, a year and a half ago, during, I guess we're on the third Iraqi election, it was the first or second Iraqi election, which it was two residents of Baghdad sitting there watching a television, and one thing said, you know, Sheikh so-and-so doesn't keep his promises, and then it said, you know, and I'm Sheikh so-and-so, and I take responsibility for this message. And then it was the man in Baghdad turning to his wife and saying, oh good, we've brought American-style democracy to Baghdad. And the sense of that was, you know, how awful that we may bring negative advertising to Iraq. I think all of us can say that if in 10 years, 15 years, we're complaining about negative advertising in Iraqi elections, we'd be pretty happy with the outcome. After the 2000 election, the most divisive election in American history, passions high. The Onion, which is, I'm biased towards since it was biased towards, it originally started in Madison, Wisconsin, had a cover after the election, which is civil war breaks out, Gore supporters executed in New Mexico, Tipper Gore kidnapped, riots going on. The reason why it was funny is it wasn't really happening. People were engaged, people were passionate, people were certainly extraordinarily angry, but this country had a peaceful transfer of power. And all of the acrimony, all of the negative advertising, we still did okay. Now listen, I don't want to be Pollyannish about advertising, Much of the time that our elected officials spend, have to spend raising money, is to raise money to spend on television advertising. Doug probably knows the number better than I, but in a competitive Senate race or presidential race, it's probably, what, 60 or 70% on TV at this point?
Sure.
Yeah, probably 60 or 70%. So the amount of time that our elected leaders have to spend money, even if you don't think they're being bought, there's that perception. And two, it takes time away from doing other things. And three, when you talk to members of Congress who have retired, to senators who are retired, when you talk to people who decided not to go into politics in the first place at all, it's often because they don't want to have to spend that time raising money. Okay. We're also seeing, and Doug talked about this, and this is a natural outgrowing, intense targeting of political advertising. So in some ways, the problem in 2004 wasn't that there was too much political advertising, it was that there was too few political advertisements at much of the country. Over 90% of the political advertising in this country was directed at 40% of the population in 2004. New York, California, Texas, the three biggest states in the union, got absolutely zero ads in 2004. And I think when you have congressional seats that are uncompetitive, when you have seats that are always uncompetitive in presidential elections, over time, you are going to see states that are simply just not competitive, and politics is going to leave them behind. Interest in politics is going to leave them behind. And you're also going to be able to have politicians, elected leaders, just cater to the bases and not worry about swing voters in any sense of the word. Let me finish up by talking about a couple changes that we're seeing, and I think we'll see. I think political advertising is going to get even more targeted. People talked about 16 or 17 battleground states in the 2004 election. It was probably really only 9 or 10 battleground states in the 2004 presidential election, and it was arguably only 2 or 3 real battleground states in the presidential election. So you had some states that were targeted, then you had some states that were targeted, and then you had Florida and Ohio. And the number of political advertisements in Florida and Ohio the last month, the last 2 months, the last 6 months of the 2004 campaign even swamped other traditionally very competitive states like a Pennsylvania or a Michigan. I think you're going to have the campaigns increasingly try to target their television ads more carefully on these niche shows and also on these niche cable networks. And the Bush team, the Republican team, National Media Incorporated, certainly did that in 2004. Hopefully there's not any television buyers out there. I always say it's an easy job. You buy as much local news as you can, and then you sort of try and fill in everything else. And still, the great majority of ads are bought on news. But both candidates are trying to more carefully, and still both candidates did that, but you saw the Bush team more likely to buy shows like NYPD Blue and JAG, and the Kerry team more likely to buy shows like Oprah or Ellen or Judge Judy that were more likely to be targeted at women. More and more cable, you're going to see more ads on cable. And while it's true that we haven't seen a national buy since 1992, and that was even a modest one, we did see some national buys on cable, because just the way you buy cable, it's so difficult to go buy cable market by market or city by city that it was cheaper for them to buy some of the national ads. So we may see some more national cable. Two other things, and then I'll end and leave some time for questions. Doug talked about remote control and how that changed it, and how that scary that was for political consultants. Now add in TiVo. My 5-year-old and 8-year-old, TiVo is a verb for them, and they just don't watch commercials. They just fast forward through commercials, never ever watching them. And so we keep saying that this is going to be the next election in which TiVo penetration in the country is going to reach a significant amount, but there is going to become a time, and commercial advertisers are certainly very worried about this, where it will be difficult to reach people through television advertising because people will simply wait a minute or two, start TiVoing their show, and then be able to fast forward through the ads. The other big thing, and I think this is a great area of study, is the double effect that political advertising has. And also, when I talked about some in the media not having particularly savvy political reporting skills, much of the effect of political advertising is also how it's covered in the media. So Doug asked, can any of you name a television ad aired by one of the two candidates in 2004? Absolutely fair question. You're probably right. It would be hard. But if we also ask, can you name one ad from 2004, most of you would say the Swift Boat ad. And most of you would say the first Swift Boat ad. The first Swift Boat ad aired a little over 300 times in August in huge media markets like Rhinelander, Wisconsin. So all of the impact of the Swift Boat ad was the coverage that it got in the free media. And you're seeing campaigns being much more aggressive in the number of creatives that they are making. So you used to maybe make 6, 7, 8 ads over the course of a campaign. Now you might make 120, 130 ads over the course of the campaign. There's no news cycle. They're continually reacting. Plus, they're trying to throw other ads out there to try and attract free media coverage. And even though the media might be commenting on the accuracy of the ad or critiquing the ad, what are they also doing? They're showing the ad. So I'm not at all Pollyannish about the effect of TV advertising, but I think in general, the academic evidence shows that at the margin, television advertising moves elections by a couple percent. At the margins, it can increase interest, engagement, knowledge, and turnout by a couple percent. And I think the bigger problem is the context in this country in which political advertising is taking place. And I don't think that political advertising has caused that greater political context. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken, very much. We have time for a few questions. Curtis?
I don't know whether they're questions or not. There are about three statements that, you know, that Ken provoked, I think. Although one statement that Doug provoked. You know, Doug said, you know, these ads are used because they work. You know, but they work as a totality for 50% of the consultants at Maxim, those who win. They're all aimed at winning, but you know, it only works for 50%, but 100% of the electorate is a loser for having that type of dialogue. The second thing is something you said, which is, I don't know about interest, but if you factor out the elections that have high emotional content, Bush's polarization, David Duke, Ali North, you will find that the statistics come out, the greater amount is spent in advertising, the lower the turnout. If you factor those things in, that's not true. But if you have a neutral environment, the more advertising you have, the more likely it is to drop turnout. You know, my favorite example is the D'Amato re-election race. You know, more was spent in that race than any other race in America, in that state, ever. It was close, very close. The turnout was a record low, and it was lower than the turnout for the one-sided Pataki race. The same thing happened in Ohio in the same year, in terms of the Taft election. The third thing I'd like to say is one of the problems of political advertising, and I tend not to use negative, is all the other forms, and we had very ugly campaigns going back to Jefferson and Jackson and all those campaigns, but all of those were in media that were answerable. The problem with television is, the 60-second spot is not answerable except in time. You have a medium that hits two senses. You could not answer, except 4 years later, 2 years later, the Mitch McConnell ad with bloodhounds chasing Mitch Huddleston from the Capitol through the woods to find him on a beach in Acapulco. creating an absentee junketeering senator who had a 91% attendance record. You could not argue with the Bloodhounds. 2 years later, Wendell Ford put an ad out for his reelection, in which there was a light in the Capitol, and he was working, and his Bloodhound was sitting next to him, and the clock struck midnight, and he sort of said, "Come on, dog, let's go." That's not what our politics ought to be. Our politics ought not to be a competition with, between media consultants as to who is more slick. So I would love responses from both of you.
I was wondering why Kurt Gann's card was up here, and I now know that he's on the panel. Let me play politician and interpret your comments as a question that I want to answer. just make two points, and I'll try to make them very quickly. One is in response to something you said, and also to something that Ken said. I don't disagree with much of what Ken said at all. I think it is true, and undeniably so, however, that since the age of negative TV advertising has exploded from the mid-80s on, the percentage of those eligible to vote in this country who have actually voted has generally been going down year after year. There have been some exceptions. 2004 was one of them. The second point is that this is a point that none of us have made, and forgive me for not making it, because it was a major point that I wanted to and I forgot. The biggest price of all of negative advertising is that when you win because of people voting against the other side, which has become what our politics have become, you do not win a mandate. You aren't winning a mandate for who you are. You are elected because of who the other guy is. And people who are elected to public office who do not have a mandate when they get there find it extraordinarily more difficult to govern. I know the president likes to talk about using his political capital. I notice he does not say he has a mandate. And in fact, I think building a mandate is an important part of every political campaign, so that when you get there, you can actually do those things that are priorities to you. Now, I don't blame a consultant for wanting to win rather than win the election rather than winning a mandate too, but I would hope that more consultants and more candidates stress the need for a mandate than they do just for winning.
Sure. A couple things. I mean, first, talking about Curtis made an argument about that, at least in American political history previously, that attacks are answerable. I'm not sure that's the case. I mean, you had many attacks by a partisan press that was simply in one camp or the other, and there was little that another candidate could do to answer an attack because the newspaper simply wouldn't publish it. And also, if there was whisper campaigns or claims, it's much more difficult to combat that. Although my area of expertise is certainly not American political history. In terms of advertising effects, I'd be happy to look at the studies that you've talked about. But every single study I've ever seen indicates that in a model controlling for other factors, when you throw in television advertising, when you throw in dollars spent, certainly there's exceptions, which in the D'Amato Schumer race, as you point to, is one. Certainly there are exceptions, but the overwhelming academic evidence is more spending, more political advertising, that there is higher levels of turnout. One of the things, and then Doug made the point about this correlation between negative advertising and a decline in turnout. The decline in turnout is the big puzzle in political behavior, in political science, is trying to figure out why we've had that decline in turnout since 1960, at a time when registration laws have relaxed and educational levels have gone up. And many of this room have taken a lot of time trying to answer those sorts of questions. I think just though the fact that negative advertising, increase in political advertising is correlated with that, doesn't necessarily give me much confidence that that's the cause of that, what is clearly a multifaceted explanation for that decline. Where I think we want to look, if we want to look for, and again, I don't want to be Pollyannish about political advertising, about negative advertising, or what are the long-term effects? And I don't know if you like my vitamin analogy, but I'll stick with it. We have no idea what the long-term effects are of a use of such a vitamin when the diet of general political knowledge is so bad. And so I think a very interesting question to look at down the line is what's the cumulative effect of years of negative political advertising? And also remember the cumulative effect in certain states of negative political advertising, because there's certain states that just elections, they don't have competitive elections, so they don't see any of this.
Let me just ask one question. One part of the bipartisan campaign finance reform bill was the stand by your ad provision. You made the reference to the cartoon in Iraq. And the thinking was that if candidates had to say, I stand by this ad, I support this ad, that would reduce the amount of negativity.
That worked very well, didn't it?
Yeah,
no, I mean, absolutely had. It took a little while for consultants to figure out how they wanted to do that. But listen, enshrined in the legislation, and I think it was actually David Price, a political scientist, a member of members of Congress from North Carolina, who inserted that. But his assumption was negative advertising bad, that we want to choke off negative advertising. If you make people take responsibility for their ad, that's gonna make negative advertising decline. I obviously question the premise of whether negative advertising was so awful. And also, as Doug pointed out, the forces, the factors driving the choice to go negative, competitiveness, what you can say about someone else, your ability to knock someone else's faves down, completely trump, if you're a little embarrassed, have to go on and say, I take responsibility for that ad.
For me to understand how you would contend that negative advertising helps create understanding, which was one of the comments you made. And it seems to me that almost virtually every subject that's going to be brought up today, including the subject of advertising, creates a basis for increased cynicism of the American electorate. And the subject of the conference today is the state of American democracy. And shouldn't we be thinking about, real hard, about how we could build more civility into campaigns and position the electorate to make a reasoned assessment and judgment of candidates that even go beyond the debates that would raise the prospect of lifting the quality of our democracy. And I think it's a fundamental problem that not only in terms of elections, but almost virtually every subject, there is a lot of reason for our citizens to be cynical. So I just wanted you to react to that.
You know, I think we can all agree on the reason for this conference. And let me sort of take your second question first, and then I'll speak about some reasons why negative advertising might actually inform. The word civility, I think, is a fine word. You should respect other people's views.
but you should argue passionately and aggressively for what you believe in. That we have a political system when it's two candidates running against each other. The reason why they're running against each other is supposedly because they think they would do a better job than the other person. And I think of it as them making their best possible arguments about why they should be elected. And yes.
Excuse me, I'm completely escaping. I'm making a bad point. Really,
My experience with negative advertising is really creates a fundamental distortion than it does create or move people toward an understanding of truth. If you take an example of the Cain election, where the opposition was pointing to one action that Cain made in his history as a prosecutor, and then he laid the label on him that he's soft on crime. I can't see how that creates understanding, and I think that really what negative advertising is really trying to paint somebody with a picture. That is often a fundamental distortion of reality. So that's my concern.
No, sure. I mean that's a valid concern. Why would you want politicians to have to behave any better than we're engaging here?
Because there are leaders, Ken.
Yeah, but you make arguments. You know, this gentleman had a little bit of a scowl on his face, and he's passionate about it, and he disagrees with me, which is fine. But you're sort of rolling your eyes and absolutely suspicious of what I'm doing, which is fine. And we can get into a discussion. I can give my evidence, you can give your evidence, and I think the bottom line is all of us learn a lot better. Now, we can all point to ads we've seen, and there are many ads that we would claim as outrageous, okay? But the empirical evidence shows that 80% of negative ads are about policy, okay? Positive ads, I just don't think you learn much with the positive ad, although I certainly like wearing khaki pants and a blue shirt, and I have a yellow lab, of a candidate walking along the beach with their khaki pants and yellow shirt or blue shirt and yellow tie, and their dog and their family. You simply don't learn anything there. There is no information. Can things be taken out of context? Certainly, that puts a discussion on the table, which the media can engage in and which the other campaign can engage in. Civility, absolutely. But I think you can be civil and be aggressive and argue passionately for what you believe in.
All right. I think we need to wrap it up now.
Can I take the opportunity to answer this? Because this is really what this conference is about, I believe. And I don't mean just in terms of advertising. I think, personally, that our system is quite broken at a time when the issues are extraordinarily important. And I don't blame the consultants for that. I don't blame negative advertising for that. I don't blame either political party for that. I blame all of us. The interesting thing is, to me, that if the issues are so great, and your list of issues and mine will be, and Ken's too, will be probably about the same. The issues are so great facing the country that the 2008 election, if we don't get things right in 2008, a lot of what this country stands for is going to drift away. We have the time really is quite short because the issues are so big. Now, I believe there's help on the way. David Broder talked about a new generation. And I think that young people, and I've had the chance over the past few years to work with young people in this country, are passionate about their country and passionate about their ideals, don't like the system, are cynical but want to change it, and are, I think, ready for the first time, if given the opportunity, to get engaged. And secondly, in this, I don't know what the details are, I don't know how this shapes out, but it seems to me that we are headed toward a presidential election that the public perceives is so important that they are willing to consider new alternatives. Disappointed in the leadership of both parties that they're willing to consider some third alternative in a major and significant way. That's been the history of this country. And that's the best piece of news, that whenever we're in trouble, each new generation of Americans redefines freedom in its own terms for its own times. And we're at that point where that needs to happen again, and I think it will in 2008. So stay tuned.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Ken, for a very interesting discussion.